Presentation from our NIST of AFRINIC on joint RIR statistics.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ernest from AFRINIC, and I'm going to present the Internet Number Resource Status Report, which is a global look at the numbers that have been allocated and assigned by all the RIRs in their respective regions. The data in this report is current or accurate as of 31st March 2006, and this presentation is updated or prepared by all the five RIRs. Maybe a brief introduction for those that do not know what the NRO is. The NRO in full is the Number Resource Organization. This is a body or entity that was formed under a memorandum of understanding by the then four RIRs in about October 2003. And it was formed to kind of coordinate the activities that involve all the RIRs. This would be technical, policy-related, etc. So for those who are interested in finding out more about the NRO, you can go to their website, www.nro.net. We first look at the global view of IPv4. In yellow, the bar graph in yellow shows the number of IPv4/8s that are currently available and reserved by the IANA for allocation to the RIRs. And we see that currently there are 62/8s that are reserved by the IANA for the allocation to the RIRs. And a little below in orange, is it brown, is the number of experimental/8s, which is 16, and those that are reserved for multicast, also 16/8s. 1/8 is reserved for private use and the other for public use. On the left-hand side is a view of the number of /8s that the IANA has allocated to the various RIRs. And we see that AFRINIC holds only 1/8, followed by LACNIC holding 4/8s. APNIC holding 19/8s, ARIN holding 23/8s, and RIPE-NCC holding also 19/8s. Next is a look at the IPv4 allocations that the RIRs have made to their members, to the LIRs and ISPs within their respective communities, and this data is represented in the number of /8s that have been allocated or assigned only from 1999 up to March 2006. Just looking at 2005 shows that RIPE-NCC, which is in green, allocated about 3.5/8s, and in 2006 they have so far allocated about 1/8. Followed by ARIN, followed by APNIC, ARIN, LACNIC, and of course AFRINIC. This pie chart also shows the global percentage, the distribution of the IPv4 address space that has been allocated by the RIRs also from 1999 up to March 2006. This shows that RIPEN CC, RN, and APNIC have all allocated about 32% of the IPv4 of the total, which is about 13/8, followed by LACNIC with about 1.3/8, and AFRINIC with about 0.4 or 40% of a /8. Still, this data is accurate as of March 2006. Next, we look at the global view of the AS numbers that the RIRs have assigned to their ISPs and LIRs or members. Also, looking at data from 1999 up to March 2006, we see that RN looks to have the highest number of AS number assignments, and they assigned about 2,800 AS numbers in the year 2000. Although the general trend seems to be decreasing for RN and increasing for RIPEN CC for whatever reason. But last year shows that RIPEN CC assigned about 1,700 AS numbers, followed by RN at about 1,500, and the rest below 500 for APNIC, AFRINIC, and LACNIC. Next, again, we look at the percentage distribution of the assigned AS numbers from 1999 up to March 2006. Shows that RN has the biggest chunk of the numbers assigned between 1999 up to March 2006, with about close to 14,000 AS numbers assigned, which gives about 49% of the total. Followed by RIPEN CC with about 10,000 AS numbers, APNIC 3,000. LACNIC 766, and AFRINIC at about 171 AS numbers. Still, this is as of March 2006. Next, we look at IPv6, and this is a view of the total number of /23s that the IANA has allocated to the various regional internet registries. And we see that RIPEN CC holds the biggest number of allocations from IANA. That's about 198/23s, followed by APNIC at 73, and RN at 12, LACNIC 2/23s, and AFRINIC 1/23. Next, again, we look at how much IPv6 space has been allocated by the RIRs to their members at the various LIRs and ISPs. And right from 1999 to March 2006, that is how it looks like. RIPEN CC still looks to have the largest number of IPv6 allocations within their region, followed by, I think, APNIC, if one was to take the average. Then RN, LACNIC, and RIPEN CC. Just a view of last year shows that RIPEN CC allocated about 90/32s to members within their region. Still looking at the percentage distribution from 1999 to March 2006, shows that RIPEN CC has the biggest chunk of IPv6 allocations with about 53%, which represents 552/32s, followed by RN at 192, which gives about 18% of the total, and APNIC at 243 with about 23% of the total, followed by LACNIC and then AFRINIC. That's all about the statistics, and if you want more information, you can go to the Number Resource Organization website, look at that URL, and there's also some historical data about previous RIR allocations. All those are the various links to the various data that you might be interested in. Unless there are any questions, thank you.
Z.
The numbers of ASN numbers, I think it was 171 in the Africa region. Is that something that's including all the historical ASNs that have now been moved into AFRINIC area as well or not?
I think those are the AS numbers in the AFRINIC WIS database. There are a few that have not yet been moved into the AFRINIC WIS database, and we're working on our RIPE NCC, which holds the majority of those numbers. They're not that many, though, about maybe, could be less than 10. So, yeah.
Okay, question from the chair. Could you flip back to the earlier slide where you were showing the allocation of IPv4?
Okay, just a...
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Okay, so my question is not really to you, Ernest. It's just generally to the panel in front of us. It strikes me that AFRINIC's IPv4 space allocation is very low. And I just wanted to hear from some of the other IRRs, and maybe probably even from RIPE, who helped us during the bootstrap stage. Does this have more to do with the fact that most ISPs, when they apply for, or LIRs, when they apply for an allocation, their planning is too short-term? In other words, they are not planning far ahead enough and therefore requesting enough space for, let's say, 2 or 3 years of anticipated growth? What is your feeling? In your experience with your members, do you have cases where an LIR applies for address space for, let's say, 4 years, a projection of 4 years, and maybe does or doesn't achieve the growth that they had anticipated?
Hello, this is Phyllis Yilmaz from the RIPE NCC. According to our policies, we used to, and for AFRINIC members as well at the time, we have a span of 2 years to allocate. Our feeling was, for African countries, was that people had a misunderstanding or, you know, misleaded idea that they cannot apply for what they need, but they had to pull their needs down. Maybe this comes back again, the heavily usage of NAT, we are not so sure. But we wanted to always make it clear that if there is a need, you will get addresses. And I believe AFRINIC is doing the same at the moment.
Sonchain from IPNIC. We allocated IP addresses for 1 year period instead of 2 years like RIMCC, but if you look at historical sort of usage of IP address in our region, you can probably see that initially when IPNIC started, we have when comparing with ARN and RIFE, our consumption is very low. But seeing the internet develop in our region, this is one of the reasons why we have more IP addresses, especially new technology like cable, ADSL and GPIS. This is something that consume more IP addresses in our region.
Germán Valdez from LACNIC. In LACNIC we have an allocation period of 3 months only. Actually, we are going to discuss to increase this size to 12 months. And also has been a informal discussion among the registration managers from different IRR discussing about these practices of allocate how much month should be enough for an ISPs. In the case of Latin America, the use of NAT was very broad use in all the on the region, and the message what we send to our customer, to our members, or to our possible members is that the use of NAT is not an issue. I mean, if you need IP address, come for it. I mean, it's, don't think in a, with an ad mind. There is IP address for you need. I mean, not stop for that because you have not.
I think Ray in the back had something.
Yes, Brian. The real issue is not so much the length of time for which the allocation period exists, whether it's 3 months or 3 years. Certainly, plans that go out for 4 or 5 years are very acceptable to be sent to an IRR. Aaron has received plans that go out as far as 5 or 10 years, but that doesn't affect the amount of address space that we allocate on a three-month basis for an initial allocation. What really affects the allocation rate is the climate in which the Internet is growing in the area. So Felice touched on one of these things, which was the use of NATs. If you're in an environment which promotes the use of NATs because of regulation or whatever, that's going to perhaps stifle the business concerns and the ability of independent ISPs to develop their business models. So it's really more one of the environment of the development more than it is so much of the length of time of planning or anything else like that. So I would say that if you have policies that will adapt themselves to the ability of what the ISPs need. For example, prior to the recognition of AFRINIC in the portion of Africa that was in the Aran region, there was a special policy that was enabled that changed the minimum allocation size to something smaller than what was in the more developed portions of the Aran region, which was also a means of using policy to help stimulate growth. But in the end, it's going to be the business environment and the development environment that's going to cause the growth to occur.
Adil.
Yes. I think we have noticed that the one of the issue we have in our region, actually, is, first of all, as Philip says, the NAT, use of NAT. A lot of network infrastructure are still using it heavily. So it's part of our challenge. When I was talking earlier about awareness, it's about that there is a registry in Africa. If you need IP address, you can contact us and get the IP address. And I think that was the main reason why the number of allocation in Africa was slow. But also the business, the internet business, is not that big as in other countries, but we are seeing a growth, because if you look at the trend from 1999, allocation in Africa are quite doubling every year, and this year I think we are going to even multiply by 3 or 4 the number of allocation in our region. So I think there is many factors which affect the number of allocation, but one thing sure is that we have IP address available, so people should request what they need. Thanks.
Thanks all of you for your responses. I think it seems clear that really the big problem we have is an awareness one amongst the operators. If people don't really understand the role of the RIR and feel that they have to use as much NAT as they can to keep down their use of public address space, it affects in many ways the operations of the internet within the country. Having been involved in a number of networks, I know that's a reality. Most of us ISPs try to use less public address space in the feeling that we are kind of saving the internet from running out. Thank you very much, Ernest.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we'll now have a representative from APNIC.
Good morning. My name is Son Tran. I'm from APNIC. I wish to going to provide a brief update of the recent activity at APNIC. First, stand closer to the thing. First, let's look at the policy that have been discussed recently in APNIC region. The proposal to apply the concept of using HD ratio to measure the utilization for IPv4 address have been didn't reach consensus in our region. And the proposal for the 4x ASN to replace or to upgrade it to 4x ASN have reached consensus. And the comment period have completed last week, so we are waiting for the Executive Council to approve this policy to become effective. There is also discussion on whether we should change the sort of national internet registry sort of a fee structure for our indirect member, and also whether we should restructure our member fee.
Sorry, could you tell us what the HD ratio means? We're not all familiar with the terminology.
HD ratio, I don't know the acronym, actually. Host density, what it actually means is to apply how much IP address you have used, again, how much you have been allocated. In the previous, so in IPv6, you have to use what we call a 0.8 before you can apply for more IPv6 address space, so this is something that some of our members believe that with a larger ISP in our region, this concept should be applied using, we can use this sort of concept to apply for IPv4 address space. Looking at over the year 2005, we have a few policies that reached consensus and approved by our regions. The one is that we have common is the IANA policy for allocation of IPv6 block to IR. This is a common sort of global policy, and it has been reached consensus in our region, but we are waiting for other IR so that we can start implementing them. Proposal to publish the statistic of all the assignment, including private and public assignment in our database, to make it available in our website so that researcher can sort of analyzing these sort of statistic to determine when IPv4 going to run out and so on. This has been implemented, and the statistics is available on our website. Proposal 27, now do we stop there? No, we don't stop there. We're trying to, always trying to improve the service for our members. We have a new project called Client First Project, which is applying internally for our staff by examining all the feedback on the survey at our member meeting, at our training, through help desk, through staff experience dealing with our members, to improve reviewing the processes, procedures, so that we can improve. For example, we change the reaction and content, reviewing many of the forms to make it easier for members, especially the one that come from that could not speak English, so we simplify the language. We make it easier for our members to get what we call a certificate when they're accessing MyAPNIC. And also there are many, many other sort of mini sort of projects within this sort of project, so that we hopefully that we can continue improve the members for the service for our members. With regard to training, we have conducted training since 2000, and until this stage, we continue to develop new training material, but very importantly, we're trying to analyze the feedback that we receive so that we can sort of evaluate it in a systematic way so that hopefully we can continue improve the training for our members. We have just developed what we call Routing Essential 3-Day Workshop. The DNS and Advanced DNS workshop, which is 3 days and 5 days respectively. We also conduct what a half-day tutorial on spam and security, which are the two topics that are affecting sort of our region. And recently we actually host Jody Pallet, who conducted an IBC workshop in Afinik, so that hopefully that we can sort of in the future can conduct the IBC workshop in our region. With the new staff appointed to take care of what we call CBT or e-learning, we're trying to develop the e-learning in recognizing that in our regions there are a lot of places that our members cannot attend, nor we can provide the training for them. We based on a few principles. The first one is the sort of adult learning principle, and the second one is English is second language. So how can we make it better so that our member can learn what we're trying to teach? The two platforms that we are going to implement this one is on Coursemill and Lectora. We hope that to have the internal testing module available sometime in May for internal testing and June for our member to test. And the real sort of production sort of module will be available sometime in the last quarter of this year. In terms of research and development, we are busy testing what we call resource certificates in the late 2005, and we're going to try the full service in this year. You will find more detail later when we presented this one. We also look at analyzing the all the prefix that have been announcing on the internet since 1997, so that to help us to identify whether the prefix that have been announced in the past or not, so that we can implement what one of the policy we have, what we call recovering of historical resource policy. We also studied consumption of ASN, and when it ran out, this is one of the reasons why we have this proposal called extending it to 4 bytes ASN. You can find many sort of information on this research by Jeff at the website below here, portoru.net. Other activities in APNIC in terms of communication, we are continuing to develop internal multimedia sort of modules so that it helps our members. Instead, you have to read through the whole sort of document or on our website, learning on how the policy process works. You can actually watch the demo that we have. And we, because we have a lot of members speaking different language, so we try to translate a lot of our policy in different language as possible and public these activities. Internet governance is one of the areas we also concentrate quite a lot on. We have started attending with other IR on a recent visit at Tunis. We also lent a couple of staff to the UNDP to conduct the survey on internet governance in AP region, and we also have representatives to many of the meetings that concerning internet governance, like ICANN, WISIS, and so on. We also providing sort of being part of other organizations like UNDP and ISOP to provide a grant to some of the practical sort of research or project to improve the infrastructure in the APNIC region. I believe this now this program in now have in Netflix. With regard to the future APNIC meeting, APNIC 21 will be held at Kaohsiung, Taiwan, from the 4th to 8th of September 2006, and APNIC 23 will be held with in conjunction with APRICOT 2007 in Bali, Indonesia. Now, we would invite all of you to attend if possible, but if you cannot attend but wish to follow what we discuss at the meeting, you can watch the webcast. You can ask questions through the chatting. We have audio. We have live transcript. If your English is not good, you cannot hear the accent that the speaker presented over there. You can follow this sort of thing. So the registration is open now, so feel free to register. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions for me?
available to answer any questions. Yes, sir.
You know, in your report, you mentioned the NIRS, the National Internet Registries. I think this is, in the last minute in the WISIS in Tunis, there was a recommendation which referred not only to RIAS but also to national internet registries. Do you have some experiences how this works, and do you see a trend that more countries are, you know, trying to establish national internet registries and that RIAS get some problems with that?
Good question, a tough one. But we do have a few economies in our region trying to establish the, what we call national internet registry, but I forgot the first question. We have total at least like 5 NIR, but we might have more in the future. So I don't quite understand.
Perhaps I can jump in here. Jared Ross, also from APNIC. The national internet registries that we have at the moment are in Japan, Korea, yeah, China, Vietnam, Indonesia, and did I miss any?
Taiwan.
And Taiwan, of course. One of the main services they provide is a linguistic one to be able to deal with the local ISPs in their own language. And that is a big issue in our part of the world, and that's why we have the NIRs there. There have been a few different countries expressing an interest in forming their own NIRs lately, but nothing really concrete has come through that. It does pose a challenge to APNIC. If a lot of other countries were to form NIRs, that would have a very big impact on the way that we collect revenue. Our fee schedule is set up to provide a fairly hefty discount to the NIRs because it charges in a different way to our regular members. We do currently have a fee schedule review going on with it's been discussed at our last couple of open policy meetings, and one of the issues that will be there is what would be the impact of more NIRs forming, because if a few big ones were to suddenly form, for example, if India and another couple of big countries or Australia suddenly formed NIRs now, would have a major impact on our revenues. So, yeah, we're looking at those issues.
Yes, sir.
Alex from Kenya. What are your experiences with respect to the excitement, growth in your registration of public address space, with the excitement of WiMAX and Wi-Fi, and perhaps also server applications? What impact has it had in your region, which maybe we could try and see whether AFRINIC could borrow in inspiring growth of internet ISPs?
Wireless, we don't have many, but we do treat them as similar to other. But as I mentioned before, that we have the most growth in our region is the sort of cable and ADSL and voice over IP address, where the sort of one-to-one sort of contention ratio, that's where a lot of IP address being used in our region. I'm not sure whether that answers your question or not. I'm not sure whether I answered the question.
And I probably can't give a hugely specific answer either, but there has been a trial going on in Japan to look at the effect of really large-scale address deployments to create different services. And the idea of that is to try and predict what's going to be happening as IPv6 becomes more and more popular. If you look back through a couple of our meeting archives on our website, you might find some references to that large-scale deployment trial in Japan, and there's a few interesting observations in there. I don't know that we can say anything specific about particular technologies here, but as Son said, there were some big explosive periods, particularly when Korea started cabling up everywhere, and now China's been growing very quickly in recent times. But in our region, a couple of countries have been very early to get into IPv6, perhaps with those things in mind.
Yes. I have a question. It's interesting to see that APNIC offers some non-core workshops like routing essentials, DNS, advanced DNS, spam, security. Why is that, and what is the driver for offering this kind of training?
Very good question. We did conduct the survey in 2002, and from that survey, our member clearly sort of indicate to us that we need to provide this sort of training. So whatever we do, we reflect on the member survey, so that's why we have it. Any other question? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Son. We'll now have a presentation from Aaron.
Good morning. I'm Ray Polzak, the CEO and president of Aaron. Actually, I guess maybe I should do a small test for the translators. Would you like me to talk this fast? Or would you rather I talk the way I usually talk? Okay. Well, I'm not trainable, I guess. I can't. I broke it. Okay. Which one? This one, right? Aha! I've been vindicated. Actually, I was working until Brian asked that question and Ernest had to go back. That's when it stopped working. So. I will just go mobile. Okay. So, I'm going to give you a little description of the organization, our activities, membership size. I'm going to do a couple different types of statistics. We'll talk about recent policy activity, and the last item is not Aaron 17, it's actually Aaron 18. I apologize for that typo. So, membership as of the end of March of this year is as shown. Obviously, the predominant number of members in our region are in the U.S. There are also six members now that are currently outside the U.S. Just because they wanted to be members of Aaron. And some activities. First of all, at AFRINIC 4, we've got a number of people from Aaron attending. First of all, Bill Manning was here, but he had a health issue and had to leave over the weekend. So otherwise, he would have been here. From our advisory council, Aaron is the only region that has an advisory council. We have two people, Leo Bicknell, who's right there waving his hand, and Ron Da Silva, right there, who is also the chair of the advisory council. If you want to learn more about our advisory council, what their role is in the policy development process, and in fact it is a very important role in our policy development process, please talk to one of those two. Then from staff, we've got Einar Bolin and Nate Davis and Stephen Middleton and Kathy Murphy and me. And then from the address council from the Erin region, we have Sandy George right there. So anyway, we're all here. Please take advantage of us, and we'll be glad to tell you what's really going on in our region. So I'm not going to go through a lot of this, but these are the kinds of things that our various departments are involved in, and you can see that they reflect the scope and role of each particular department. So anyway, I'll just let you briefly read that, and if someone has some questions on anything in particular, I'll be glad to cover it later. And working with the other IRRs, we're working with the other IRRs for the incorporation documents. Also, the activity which probably seems to be many people to be a hobby, which is having a contract with ICANN. And then lastly, we've been participant in the Internet Governance Forum as it gears up this year. And we've also been participating with the other IRRs in the Government Advisory Council or Committee's workshops. Some statistics. For 2005, if you wanted to contact Erin via the web, these are the monthly stats. And if you do a real quick, dirty analysis, you'll see that if you were there at 11 a.m. Eastern time on a Wednesday, that was the most popular time. Erin has two help desks, a telephonic help desk. One is run by the Registration Services Department. The other one's running by the Financial Services Department. And the graph on the left shows the activity in that area. On the right, you see the email coming into the Hostmaster mailbox. This is the monthly totals with the spam removed. What you're seeing is about 8% of the mail that the Hostmaster receives. The rest of it is spam. And so, real quickly, in 2005, that mail generated a number of templates. A little over 44,000 were taken care of in any one month as an average. Almost 43,000 of those were done via an auto-processing system, which is why we have seven people to do all this work. There are stops in there that require mandatory checks if certain features are detected in the template submission. And then there were 2,000 or so that were done through the interactive or manual process, most of those resulting because of special requests or because the software detected something that needed a person's attention. And those that we collected because of this activity, $1.5 million U.S. dollars. Recent policy activity as a result of the Erin 17 meeting, which was just conducted in Montreal about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. The three policies on the top, the one for IPv6 PI assignments, the one for IPv6 assignment utilization, and for the 4-byte AS number, have gone completely through the policy process and have been adopted as policies in the Erin region and are now in various stages of implementation. Three others have gone back out for further discussion as a result of a non-consensus on both the mail list and on the at the meeting. Now, non-consensus means that we can't get enough people to agree that the thing is either good or bad.
This means that there's a split. And then two of them were actually abandoned. The 2006-4 was a later proposal that was similar to 2005-1. And what occurred there was is that the authors of both proposals got together, merged their proposals, and agreed that to abandon 2006-4 in favor of 2005-1. And then lastly, 2006-5 was abandoned. The next ARIN meeting will be in St. Louis in October of this year. And you can go to ARIN.net for details, some features. This will be a joint back-to-back meeting with the NANOG. And so we will have tutorials and training. Of course, we'll have some technical presentations. We'll have some BOFs. And, of course, the main feature is the two-day public policy meeting, so we'll have 2 days of policy discussions. And then, as always, we will have a social event. I'll go out on a limb and say we always had very good social events. So if you've never been to an ARIN meeting, at least come for the social event. You'll enjoy. Have a good time. A couple other things. At the last meeting in Montreal, we instituted what we call a cyber cafe. We found that no one was using the terminal room, so why waste the equipment and space for that? Let's make something a little bit more convenient. So in the cyber cafe, you will still find a few terminals for people to use, plus a printer access, so you can bring in your laptop, go wireless, or however you want to do it. But in addition, that's where we have the interface point for the two help desks, and then they have private consultation rooms off to the side. We also have set up a learning kiosk, which has some of the CBTs running for people to sit down and learn right there, and there are people there that can help facilitate the learning experience while it's going on. And as I said before, we've got the printers. The other thing is that we are going to have a debut at this meeting. At the ARIN 17 meeting, we said that, hey, something is going to be happening in ARIN 18. And what it is that we've got those guys. I don't know if you see it very well, but there's four characters there, A-R-I-N. And what we are doing as a result of looking at doing something else in outreach, we are producing a comic book. These are superheroes, and they will all have characteristics that deal with some aspect of how a registry operates as far as being accessible and responsive and so forth. And actually, you see them standing in the
comic book. Yeah, that would be excellent. Now we have a representative from LACNIC to give us their presentation.
Well, thank you for the invitation to do this presentation. My name is Germán Valdés. I work as a policy and external relationship manager in LACNIC. I'm going to do the brief presentation about what are we doing in Latin America and Caribbean region. I'm going to go through a very fast slide about statistics. As you can see, this is the IPv4 allocation per semester. You can see that since this point, the second semester of 2002 is when we start operations, independently, and thus you can see how they has been increased the allocations of PV4 in a region. This is another slide, but this is made of a slide 24, and also you can see the increase of the size of the allocation what we're doing since we are operating in Latin America. We started in November 2002. The IPv6 allocations in Latin America have been also increased, basically because a program, a one-day event that we organized last year. I'm going to do that topic later in this presentation, but you can see an increase during the 2005 of 34 allocations on IPv6, and this is the distributions of the IPv6 allocations among countries. You can see that so far we have 57 IPv6 allocations, where 46% of these allocations are visible in internet at this time. It's not only the fact of doing the allocation, but also following the status of this addressing, and be sure that they are really used on the internet. Finally, this is the last statistical slide I have for you. It shows how our membership is composed. We have 39 members, and we see that the small, medium, and micro-small members, they represent almost 70% of membership. So you can see that the small ISPs are the most important members, or the majority of the members in LACNIC. So many of the policies are shaped depending on the requirements or the needs of this kind of ISPs. But LACNIC is not only, or the IRIs in general, is not only about the numbers and providing the services that the people expected. Also, we have a very strong relationship with the community. In the case of LACNIC, as I mentioned before, we organized a one-day event during 2005. We call it the IPv6 Tour. It's like the rock bands that go through one city to another city. We organized this seminar about IPv6 deployments, IPv6 awareness. We visit 10 different cities and 10 different countries during 2005, and we have more than 2,500 participants during this event. That's why we increase a lot the awareness of IPv6 in our region. That's why the increase of the IPv6 allocations in Latin America. Also, we are working with different groups, the Latin American Forum, what we call it the FLIP6, the IPv6 Forum, which is a group we get together in order to exchange experiences about the deployment of IPv6, and also research projects about IPv6. And we have also supporting the Latin American IPv6 Task Force. We organize workshops, and we support research projects about this new protocol. We have also a Plus Raíces project, we call it Plus Root. That is is an agreement with ISE, which are the minister or the manager of the F-Root server. So we can deploy 7 root servers in Latin America through the Anycast technology. And so far we have signed the agreement with 4 countries. The first one has been deployed in Chile in last December. The agreement already signed with organizations in Venezuela and Argentina and Panama. And we are waiting for the equipment, the necessary equipment to deploy these root servers. LACNIC is funding the 2 years, the first 2 years of operations, and ISE is providing the technical expertise for implementing this important project. We have different kind of organizations. We have government organizations which are receiving this root server. We have academic, we have commercial ones. There is a good variety of the kind of organization. We have also a program we call FRIDA. FRIDA is sponsoring or is a fund dedicated to give small grants to ICT projects in the region related to social impact, public policies, regulation, technical projects. we are organizing a second a second phase for this project. The first one was for 2 years, and the fund was $500,000. We are doing the management of the fund, but we work together with another organizations like IDRC in Latin America, ISOC, and GKP. They also put the money for the fund, but we are doing all the executions tasks. Three thematics meeting for this year. These are related to internet governance. We have the first one in Uruguay last March, and we are planning to have two others in Bolivia and Colombia. We are supporting also two new communities. I was talking in the morning about the importance of the close relationship with another important stakeholders and actors in the region. So that's why the IXP community and security experts, members, and actors in Latin America are working together with us. And we have a meeting. They're going to have a meeting with us during Lightning 9 next week, the following week. And also we have a cooperation agreements with other important Latin American organizations, like the Advanced Research Networks, CLARA, the Association of CCTLDs, LAC-TLD, and ISP Association that is called ECOMLAC. We are working very close also with all the government's efforts about internet deployment and internet governance. In the case of Latin America, there is one document that is called ELAC 2007, which is document that was developed in the regional conference 2005 in Rio de Janeiro. These documents summarize 70 goals about what the governments in Latin America should accomplish in order to develop the information society in Latin America. We review these documents, and we find out that we are doing 25 of these 70 goals. And the idea here is that, or the message we are trying to send is that we are an organization which is very concerned about the development of information society, not only give you the expected services like the allocation of IP addresses, but also our goal is the stability and the growing of the internet as a whole in Latin America. Capacity of buildings also is one of the topics that we are very worried about it. I want to show you two pictures about our new facilities. This is a house that we just bought 2 months ago. We are now in the process of doing all the makeup of the houses. This is the picture. This is the view from our CEO. As you can see, he is going to suffer with a view to the beach. And because we are coming to very serious meetings, we had to remove all the good-looking girls and boys digitally from the beach, but this is a very good place to have an office. Of course, you are all welcome to visit us and have a nice view from the CEO office. we are going to have another 9 meeting next week, and we are going to have a very busy agenda. We have 9 topics to discuss. We're going to have the WHOIS privacy policy, the recovering of unused resources. We will have discussion about the allocation period. That's what one of the questions that the chair made in the morning, about increasing the 3 months allocation periods to 12. That's the proposal. We will discuss about the ASN 32 bits proposal, the use of HD radio in IPv6 and IPv4s. Also, discuss the size of IPv6 allocations. In the case, this is focused on the reassignments from ISP to their customers. The use of IPv6 allocation for end users. We are going to review also the micro allocation for policy for critical infrastructures. Some concerns that we have in the many topics that this is discussed, not only in LACNIC but in other regions, is the harmonization for allocation practices, the allocation periods, try to harmonize this with another IRRs. As I mentioned before, so far, right now LACNIC has a policy of 3 months of allocation practices for additional IPv4 allocations, and also the use of HD ratio in IPv4. One of the activity we're going to have in Lightning 9 is the annual members assembly, where we review the annual report, the fees, the relation between the other stakeholders, the ISP or NAPLA meetings, which is the ISPs in Latin America, or Open Policy Forum, the IPv6 forum, and the we don't have meeting also with the CCTLDs operators in Latin America. We don't have webcasting. You can participate through webcasting, following with these sessions, and also contribute with comments or questions on real time through a chat we're going to have available for this meeting. We have the webcasting in two languages, in English and Spanish. For more information, you can go to our page, www.lagnic.net, and our invitations to follow with the activities and the results of Lagnic 9, which is going to start next Monday. Unfortunately, I have to leave tomorrow at noon, so I can be on time and suffer all the intensity or meeting in Guatemala. Thank you. That's all. Any question, I will be happy to answer.
One question, Herman. Do you have any superheroes in LACNIC?
We have super billions.
Thank you very much, German. And we can see you're really going to have a rough time in Guatemala and suffer and not really enjoy yourself from the pictures that we see on the screen. So you have all our sympathy. Okay, now we have somebody coming in from RIPE. Paul. Welcome, Paul. It's interesting to see that there's so much competition between the RIRs that they all have to use their own laptops to present, you know.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Paul Rendick, and I'm from the RIPE NCC. I just wanted to actually say that I'm quite happy to be back in Kenya again. I was here four years ago, at a RIPE NCC regional meeting. I'm happy to be welcomed back by our local Kenyans at an AFRINIC meeting, so that's very nice indeed. I'm just going to provide you with a short, very brief actual update from the RIPE NCC. I have a photo here of our office as well. We do not have beachfront property, but we do have a canal. And I'm happy to report that we've had quite some sunny weather in Amsterdam, so it has been looking like this around our office lately. Okay, I'll just start with some of the housekeeping we've been doing. We've updated our IPv4 policy document, and that's following some recent policy changes. Because of that, we've also updated the whole heap of our request forms. There's only one request form we have outstanding, and that's our PA request form. So we've been quite busy with some of the housekeeping internally there. As far as training, we have totally revised both our LAR training course and our routing registry courses, and we have added a new training course to our mix, which is called DNS for LIRs. We have also been busy kind of integrating our training into our outreach, because we've actually seen that through our trainers and through our e-learning center, we can actually reach a whole new set of people that previously we probably could not have touched. So we've been reaching other audiences, namely regulatory bodies and governments, and even other you know, parts of industry sectors, even within the internet community. We've also been piggybacking onto third-party events. We've had a lot of ISPs contacting us and wanting to host an LIR training course in a particular city or country. And we've actually gone ahead and done these. We've seen that they're quite effective, so we'll continue to work on these. And we've been coordinating with the other RERs with our e-learning program. We obviously would all like to be able to do this at some stage, offering CBT training. And as far as the RIPE NCC e-learning center, we launched our e-learning center in November of last year. We launched it with one module, and that was using the Whois database. We felt that that was probably the most important module, because there is so much interaction that you need to do with the database when you're coming on as a new member. So we felt that we had a lot of tripping at the beginning that we felt we could solve right away. So we added that module. That is now available. We feel that our motto for the e-learning center is learning in your own space at your own pace, which we have received some feedback that people have enjoyed this module. So we're obviously working on bringing on some new ones. The ones that are under development, the policy development process, as you may know, we also we were the last of the RERs to bring out our formal documented policy development process. And with that, we started working right away on policy development process module in our e-learning center to make sure that, you know, others besides our members understood what the policy development process was all about. We will also be having an advanced database module that will come in Q3 of 2006, and a DNS for LIRs module. And I've put the URL up here of our e-learning center. I encourage all of you to go and take a look if you're interested. Some system upgrades at the RIPE NCC. We have also brought in, we've replaced our traditional PABX system with a voice over IP solution. That actually has been completed. All of that is in the office, and we're actually now working on the integration of the SIP server. We're also having some network equipment replaced, because we've seen that we've probably reached the max of efficiency with some of the systems with regards to ticketing systems, and we'd like to introduce content management system throughout the company. So we're seeing that we're needing to adjust some of our equipment to be able to handle this. The ticketing system replacement, this is one kind of big company-wide project we've been working on. At first we thought we could offer one solution throughout our organization, but now we're seeing that that might not be the case. But we have passed through a prototyping phase with the ticketing system, and now we're moving into reevaluating the requirements, and we'll be picking up that project a little bit further over the course of the summer. In the area of membership liaison and cooperation with other parties, i.e. Mainly governments and regulators, as I had mentioned a little bit earlier on the microphone there, we have introduced something called regional meetings, and this had sprung out of one of our membership surveys. We've held a number of them. The most recent one took place in Doha, Qatar, in January, where we actually brought together almost 100 networkers from that region. Roughly about 100 LIRs turned up. The last one we had in Dubai, previous to that, pulled in about 120 networkers there, and apparently we were told that that was the largest ever turnout in one room of networkers in that region, so we were quite happy about that. The next of the regional meetings will take place in Russia. We're not quite sure where yet. We're kind of teetering between Moscow and St. Petersburg. That will take place on 16th and 17th of September. And then the last one for this year will be located in Bahrain. Our Bahraini colleagues were very nice to step out and want to actually host us. So we will be having the regional meeting on 14th and 15th of November. And we see that, you know, as I had explained a little earlier, these regional meetings, they're actually, we've seen that they've been quite effective in us reaching pockets of our members that traditionally would not come to a RIPE meeting. whether it be for funding or whether they feel that maybe they don't have a step to the right meeting. We feel that we've wanted to come out and reach out to those members and understand what their needs are. So they've been quite useful in that sense. So we're happy to carry these out. In the area of enhanced cooperation with governments and regulators, we have introduced something last year called roundtable meetings, where we have actually contacted various government bodies and regulators to come and actually speak with us so that we could look at issues that maybe they have on their plates, issues that we have and our community has, and deal with these in a cooperative manner. We've had the third roundtable meeting, which was held in Amsterdam in February. That meeting actually pulled together 15 governments and regulators in one room. We had some great topics that they raised with us. We were happy to see them all come back again. We also had some governments at our RIPE 52 meeting. We had an informal lunch where we ended up having five governments, one of them being the EC government, come to an informal lunch at a RIPE meeting and discuss some of the things that they felt we could be doing together insofar as bridging the cooperation between public and private sector. What we will be doing at RIPE 53 that has sprung out of the 52 meeting is that we will actually have a session within our plenary that is dedicated to governments and the internet industry actually bringing up issues together. So that was something that they wanted to see. They felt that our roundtable meetings were very useful for them to come together, but they weren't actually meeting our industry folks. So we felt that, okay, maybe we need to have a session within our RIPE meetings that could bring these people together. We also have some roundtable meetings planned for Russia and the Gulf region, which we're hoping to have possibly back-to-back with our regional meetings later this year. Insofar as corporate governance at home, on the home front, we've just come out of our RIPE 52 meeting. I think everybody's just coming out of the dizziness of that. It was quite a busy meeting, quite a successful meeting, so we understand from our community and our members. At this meeting, some milestones that were reached there. Our financial report 2005 was approved by our members. Our annual report was published, made public to the community and to our members as well. I've put the URL here where you can find that. And out of our general meeting there, Dmitry Burkov from Russia was elected to the RIPE NCC Executive Board. This is the first time we've seen somebody from Russia come onto our board. We're actually quite happy that this happened because, believe it or not, Russia is our largest membership base in the whole of our region. We have over 450 members in that one country alone. So that's quite a number, actually. So we felt that there's some good representation now on our board from that area, and we're quite happy about that. We've also, something else that came up at our RIPE 52 meeting was we actually brought forward the idea of internet resource certification. It's something that I believe is on your agenda for later on this afternoon. We brought this forward for the first time to our community. So what we'd like to do is we would like to have some further discussions, and we will have some more detailed proposals for our community at RIPE 53. I think we've got a lot of investigating to do for our region on how we would like to propose some solutions there. And back at home, we've just started planning for 2007. We do start planning at this time, building our activity plan, putting together our budgets for our board and for our community. So it's quite busy on the home front. And the last thing is we're having the RIPE 53 meeting, which will take place in Amsterdam from the 2nd to the 6th of October. All of you are very welcome. We would welcome you all to Amsterdam again. And I'm happy to take any questions. I'm actually here with my colleague, Phyllis Ilmaz. We're here until the meeting is finished, and we're more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Well, I have one, as usual. The roundtable for government and regulators that you have, what motivated you to do that, and what kind of things do you discuss with them? Or is that classified?
Well, not necessarily. We haven't actually taken any minutes of those meetings. You can find summaries of what was actually done on our website. We have an area dedicated on our website to roundtable meetings. I think this kind of sprung out of the whole WISIS process, where we felt that we obviously can see that there is a need for the public and the private sector to come together. So we felt, okay, it's probably our duty as a registry representing our, you know, our membership in the internet community within our region to get together with these people and see some of the issues that they have. We wanted to actually spend some time with them to explain what it is that we do as a registry for the community and for our membership, make sure that that was very clear to them, and then see whether they had any questions. It was very successful. The first meeting that we had was actually quite well attended. The second one as well. We did also one of these meetings jointly with the other RIRs. So we've got a little bit of experience in this area. But like I said, the governments did really enjoy them. They do bring up a few issues that they have, but what they're looking for is that they would like to bring up issues that you see collectively within those governments and have our community, the actual industry, provide them with some feedback or provide them with some information which gives them an idea on what's happening. One thing that we saw within our last regional meeting in Qatar is that we had quite a lot of regulatory authorities from the Gulf area. The ministries have been setting up telecommunication regulatory authorities in those areas, left, right, and center. We had some of them represented at this Qatar meeting, and it was actually quite nice for them to see what was happening. They saw all of these, you know, players within the Gulf region there. They asked their questions, and they actually said, it'll be so easy for us to tell the ministry where we need to go, because we can see the concerns of our fellow, of the people that are actually running these networks within the Gulf region. Does that answer your question?
Thank you very much, Paul. Now, we are running a little bit short on time, but we will have an NRO report, and I think that is Ray, if I'm not wrong. And that will be followed by an ASO/NRONC report as well. So I don't know who exactly is presenting that one, but it's an ASO representative. Sanford. Okay, great. So if you could just be on standby to take the baton from Ray.
While Ernest is setting this up, there's portions of this report that I'm not going to give because they've already been done. For example, the internet number status and so forth. So we'll just eliminate that. And I think I'm still up here. Okay. Okay. Quick overview what we're going to discuss, the organization itself. I'm going to skip the internet number resource status, and also I will skip the policy discussions because they have already been covered either by the individual IRRs or as part of a presentation that will occur here. So that means we're just down to a few slides, Brian. Okay, from the standpoint of organization, as Ernest mentioned, the NRO was formed in October 2004. And to do those three things, which was to protect the unallocated number resource pool, to promote and protect the bottom-up policy development process, and lastly, to act as a focal point for the internet community for input into the IRR system. Real briefly, the structure is set up. The secretariat rotates on an annual basis. Currently, it resides with Aaron. The executive council is the members are appointed by the individual IRR boards. Currently, the members are the CEOs of the five registries. The executive council has established two coordination groups to help do the joint coordination of activities. One is a communications coordination group, and the other is an engineering coordination group. And lastly, the MOU provides for the establishment of the name count. That should be number counts. I don't know where name came from there. So now let's see.
These slides were done by Raul and updated by Adil, and I'm up here talking. So it's my fault because I didn't do it. All right. So anyway, it's number council, not name council. Anyway, here's the executive council for this year. The chair is Raul Echeverria. I am the secretary, the treasurer from AP NIC, Paul Wilson, and two people who apparently are without portfolio, Adil and Axel Pavlik. However, they are kept busy as well. Next year, I will become the chair. Paul Wilson will become the secretary, and Adil will become the treasurer. And then, Raul just flip down to the bottom and be a member. But you can see how the annual rotation occurs. The secretariat rotates with the secretary. We meet periodically, about 10 times a year or so, either telephonically or face-to-face. Minutes of all of the EC meetings are available on the NRL website, so please go there to read. The address supporting organization is actually the result of an MOU between the NRO and ICANN. So if you put those two together, that's how you get the address supporting organization. There are five IRRs in this organization, representing somewhere in the vicinity of about 8,300 national internet registries, local internet registries, and ISPs. The NRO is the organization that fulfills the role, responsibilities, and functions of the ICANN Address Support Organization. Address Council, what is it? Well, it is the number resource, the number council. It's a policy advisory body consisting of 15 members, three from each region. Two are elected at large. One is appointed by the IR board. And also, there are observers there from the IRRs and ICANN. The term of office for the members of the council are 3 years on a staggered term. And what it does three things. It advises the ICANN board on policy matters. It selects two ICANN board members and selects one member for the ICANN NOMCOM. Currently, these are the members. The asterisks by the names indicate those persons who were appointed by the IRR boards. And Sebastian Belagamba is the chair this year. He was elected by his fellow council members. Coordination groups are headed up from the Aran region, as that's where the secretariat is this year. The chair is Susan Hamlin, the director of Aran Member Services. And the engineering group is headed by Jenny Litzman, who's the director of engineering services at Aran. There is also a legal team. The attorneys for the five IRRs have exchanged papers between themselves so that they can deal in confidence with each other on legal matters such as contracts with ICANN and matters like that. And the coordinator this year is the general counsel from Aran, Steve Ryan. Current topics for the NRO, procedural issues for the ASO, and also we've just completed doing the group charters for the coordination groups. We're doing some follow-up activities from WISIS, which actually is leading us into the IGF. We are working on to try and establish some sort of liaison with the ITUT so that we can gain more open access into their meetings and proceedings. We are also developing a little bit more robust relationship with the Government Advisory Council Committee of ICANN. And we're also looking at some issues around the use of certification. Other topics are the harmonization of IP allocation practices. Herman made reference to that in his presentation, and we are working on those two contracts, the NRO incorporation and also the ICANN IANA services. Links are as shown. There are two ICANN board members. Currently, they are Mumdu Becca and Mohamed Diop. Mohamed's term expires in June of this year, and recently, Dave Woodlett has been elected to take his place. And so they will do a handoff at the ICANN meeting in June, which is in Morocco. Some activities of the Address Council. The policy proposal for global IPv6 has been will be addressed by the Address Council. In the policy process, they now need to forward it to ICANN. In the past, they have been providing status reports to ICANN. They have been busy working on their internal processes, and as I mentioned, they just recently selected a board member for ICANN. The meetings of the Address Council are telephonic on a monthly basis. They have two face-to-face meetings. They just conducted one in Istanbul. Actually, it was bound to a four-day workshop. And the other one will be in December of this year in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And I will stop right there. Now, if there's any questions, I would be glad to entertain them. Okay.
Okay, since there are no questions, thank you very much, Ray. I'd like to welcome Stafford. Sorry, I see a question in the back. Mohamed.
Thank you, Chairman. Ray, I just want to update on two things. The first is the registration of the NRO. Is that complete and effective? I understand that there's two steps. The first is the decision to set up the NRO, and the second one is the registration. And where is this registered now, and what is the status of the registration? The second thing is the NRO have a budget that is discussed and proposed, or is it the registry in itself that handle all the expenses that the NRO have to deal with regarding their program? Thanks.
Okay. Mohamed, by registration, I assume you discuss, you mean the incorporation? Okay. Incorporation... We have been working on documents for incorporating the NRO, and we would most likely do that in Montevideo, Uruguay. The reason for us to do that would do make us, in the light of some people, a more legal identity from the standpoint of being able to sign contracts as an organization. There is still some discussion amongst the IRR boards whether or not this is really a necessary step. The attorney group has actually put together a few documents and have worked out all the things in looking at law, applicable laws and governance and so forth. And currently that has been set aside in favor of working more so on the contract with ICANN for services such as those from the IANA and like that. Did that take care of your question, Mohammed? Now, I'm going to get to the second part. The second part on budget. The NRO is a completely lightweight organization. It has no staff. It has no budget. Any activity that is undertaken by the NRO must be unanimously agreed to by all of the IRRs. If one of the IRRs objects, this is, does not become a NRO activity. If the IRRs commit to a joint activity, such as maintaining the servers for the reverse mapping tree, then each individual IRR will contribute either by virtue of kind, for example, maybe producing servers, or staff time to produce zone files, or if necessary, contribute some funds. Another example of a joint activity that required funds was at the WISIS summit that was conducted in Tunisia last year. The NRO participated with several others from the internet community in a information pavilion, and so that required the expenditure of funds. Also, the NRO contributed money to support the operation of the
of the Working Group and Internet Governance Secretariat. That required funds. In both of those instances, those funds were authorized by the appropriate IRR boards for that specific purpose. So there was no established budget from the perspective of there being one, other than to support the program such as I've mentioned. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, you mentioned the YANA contract. The NRO has made a statement that she indicated that NRO has no interest to reply to the publication of the call from the Department
of Commerce. You're missing the comment. The comment I'm talking about is a contract between ICANN and the NRO for services that the IRRs receive from the IANA. In other words, it amounts to an agreement, service level agreement, about what we expect in terms of when we go to the IANA for number resources, and also it would establish what our contribution level would be to the ICANN budget. It has nothing to do with the IANA function.
Yeah, but my question refers to the YANA contract with the DOC and whether the NRO has a certain position, because the statement was made that the NRO will not be interested to overtake the YANA function. But do you have any idea how this could be organized in the future, because the contract ends on September 30th this year?
I cannot speculate what's going to happen with the future of that contract. All I can say is that the current position of the NRO is that we do not desire or see a need for us to operate the IANA function. We currently believe that a body separate from the NRO is capable of doing that. However, if you noted in the mission statement, one of the things that we are committed to doing is to protect the unallocated number resource pool. We do have the means and the capability between us to actually operate this function on an as-needed basis. If, for example, there was an earthquake in Marina del Rey and IANA fell into the Pacific Ocean, we could undertake that activity. But at the current time, we do not have an interest in operating the IANA function. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Hello, my name is Sanford George, and I'm on the NRO Number Council and the ASO Address Council, which are actually the same thing. Ray stole most of my thunder, so I'm going to go through these slides really quickly. And also, since I'm evidently the only thing keeping you from lunch, I'll move quickly for that reason, too. Ray already told you all about that, most of that. That one, too. He's made my job really easy. And he had that listed also. We'll move on. We've had three major meetings in the last year or so. We were at AFRINIC 2 and ICANN meeting in Vancouver, and then we were recently in Istanbul. And I forgot to mention, this is my third AFRINIC meeting. I've been at in Maputo and Cairo and here, so I'm very proud of that. Sebastian Bellagama was elected as our chair this year. Ray already told you we elected David Woodlett to the ICANN board, and we elected myself to be on the ICANN nominating committee. And the main reason that I'm up here is to tell you something about that. The nominating committee would like to invite the participation of the internet community and its ongoing process for selection of well-qualified, accomplished individuals to serve in four seats of leadership positions on ICANN. The following seats are available. There's three board seats. There's one generic name supporting organization council seat, and interim at-large council. There's two seats there, and the country code name supporting organization council, one seat there. I would encourage any of you that would like to be on one of these organizations to submit a statement of interest. And we're taking SOIs until July 16th, and then about the end of October we'll be voting on who will fill these new seats. And you can get information at www.icann.org/committees/nomcom. And that's about it for me. Any questions?
You'll probably get everybody coming with their questions after lunch. That's when, you know, they'll have sort of collected their wits. But thank you for the short and to the point presentation. Now we'd like to have a representative from ICANN present the report. I think it's Barbara.
Hi, I'm Barbara Roseman. I'm the operations manager for IANA. And any of you who have seen this presentation in at the ARIN meeting, it will look very familiar. I've just updated David's slides. I'll walk you through the current statistics, some updates on our meetings issues, and current projects we have and some goals that we have for the upcoming Marrakesh meeting. This is our current organization. We have two openings at fairly high levels, the IETF liaison and the numbers liaison. Those are both dependent on how our budget turns out for the 2006-07 fiscal year. So announcements on the openings won't be made until we've completed the budget process there. As David has talked about in the past, our performance in the past was not that good. You can see that we had things that had to be done, the time it took to do them, and the chart was going in the wrong direction. We've, over the past year, been able to turn that around, and we're very proud of that, but there's also still a lot of work that has to be done. You can see that there are not that many RIR requests that come in, and so our ability to handle these has been pretty steady for quite a while. For last month, we got one request for ASNs, and we filled it within a couple of days. So, root zone management is a little more complicated. We average about 30 requests per month. We've been doing that fairly well recently, and all name server change requests take place within 2 weeks, and that's the full turnaround time from when we first receive the request to when VeriSign notifies us that it's been implemented in the root zone. It usually takes about 7 days to actually show up in the root zone, but 14 days for the request to be completed. With internet drafts, we've shown a significant improvement in how we handle those. We now have two people working on them. And we have a group of consultants who are helping us evaluate internet drafts. For those of you who don't know, Michelle Cotton, who's responsible for this area, will be going on maternity leave again starting in June. And she will probably be out for about 3 months. But this time, we actually have somebody who can do her job in her absence. So we think that's an improvement. Port requests. We continue to have a large number of outstanding port requests. This is due to the fact that we're trying to incorporate the backlog of requests that were not addressed in the early years of ICANN. And so there were a few years where requests were handled in a very poor fashion. They were dealt with, but not in a routine and timely fashion. And so we're going back to some of those requesters to make sure that we understand the resolution of their request, if they are still interested in pursuing the port request, and trying to clear that backlog out as quickly as possible. Private enterprise numbers, you'll see that there's a large number of outstanding private enterprise numbers, number requests. Those are from people who don't confirm when they request the PEN number. We send them a confirming email saying, verify that this information is correct. If they never respond to us, we didn't in the past have a way of closing off those requests. We've now come to an agreement with the IESG that 30 days is a reasonable amount of time to hold a request like that open. And if we don't hear from them within 30 days, we go ahead and close the request. So we expect this queue to drop pretty dramatically over the next couple of months. These are some of the issues that we've been working on. David pretty much identified these issues when he came on board, though many of them were active before then. The consistent management focus and prioritization, that actually has been resolved. We feel as if we're getting the resources that we need from upper management and within the budgetary guidelines that we have. Understaffing, we're about 2 to 3 FTEs late. We're finding that hiring is difficult, not because there aren't people interested, but as I say, we're kind of caught in the middle of a budget process, and getting the new openings declared has just taken more time than we thought. Infrastructure lacking. This is improving, but it's still a little bit difficult. There are certain things that we'd like to have organized, particularly for our automation projects that just have not been able to come up yet. The ticketing system, we have all of our data now in one ticketing system. Multiple databases, this still remains an issue. We do have multiple databases of information, and as we get everything from the past into the new ticketing system, that should be cleared up. There are still complicated processes that have to be followed. The constraints on simplification here are that the processes are pretty well established, and trying to find who to work with to get those processes changed and agreement from the community about those changes has taken a little bit longer than we anticipated. There's few external process documents. That remains a problem, but we're getting that in shape as we get the new website prepared. Process exceptions is still an issue, and that is not something that's going to be easily resolved. There are different categories of requests that require certain ways of handling that often lead to exceptions in the handling. And anytime you have an exception, it's drops out of the automated queue and into a person, a handheld queue. The large backlog, as I say, we've mostly done with this. We expect by Marrakesh to have this pretty much handled and no longer an issue. The lack of automation is improving. We have several projects underway that will automate certain processes. Customer communications difficulty, that's also improving. We think the new web page will really make a difference there as people can find the information that they're looking for. Data inconsistently collected. Again, our ticketing system has helped a great deal with this, and as we go through the old databases of information and bring them into the RT system, we think that that's going to make everything a lot more simple to organize and to find data. And no tracked quality metrics. Again, this is something that David and I have worked quite a bit on to establish baseline work and then figure out where we can actually create efficiencies and measure our improvement. IANA currently has a large number of projects either being considered or being implemented. During the implementation, some of our functions may continue to be suboptimal, but we're working as fast as we can to address these issues. and improving IANA performance, responsiveness, and consistency is our ultimate goal. And we think that we've come quite a ways in meeting that goal. These are some of the major projects that we're working on. 24/7 availability. We actually have everything in place for that. We've contracted for service, and we'll be making an announcement this month. Archiving the old data. We've got it all scanned. It hasn't been OCR'd yet. The X509 addressing trust anchor, that's a process that is currently being discussed in the community. DNS structure, DNSSEC infrastructure. We're defining requirements, and we're actually evaluating some software that people have brought to us, so that one's moving forward as well. Root zone automation, there's software being that's already been designed and that's being customized for us. The IPv4 registry cleanup. And there we're looking for what the modification process is going to be to bring our registry into agreement with others. On reporting, there's software being developed and should be ready by Marrakesh. Ticket migration, all the old data is migrated. That's been completed. Detailed statistics collection, we're defining the requirements and the workflows, but again, this is part of the reporting that's going to be presented in Marrakesh and possibly before then. Customer survey, we have a vendor selected. The final approval is required. This will probably be put off until next year's fiscal year, which starts July 1st, but at that time, we'll probably move forward. The IANA web redesign, we have a first draft completed, and we're still soliciting input from users. And the PEN automation, the alpha test was expected to start in April, but we ran into a couple of programming difficulties, and so we're starting it this month. This is the proposed IANA homepage, and you're all welcome to take a look at it if you go to test.iana.org. It starts with an explanatory page, and then it leaps to this page. You can bounce around. Not all of the links will lead you to completed pages. This really is a draft and a proposal, and we're trying to get feedback on it. For our next meeting goals, which is by Marrakesh, we expect to hire two additional staff, and as I said, that's subject to some budget guidelines. Put automation projects into limited production. Clear the current request backlogs. We're nearly done with this. Update and publicly document the IANA resource allocation related processes. Publish IANA resource allocation performance data publicly, and complete migration of historical ticket data. We also expect to publish a proposed IANA website for comment. So this would be a website similar to the draft one that we've put out, but would have working links throughout. Any questions? All right, thank you very much.
One question in the back. Yeah.
Yes, my name is Alain Ayina. Do you have an idea on when IANA will sign the root zone?
Well, that's part of the DNSSEC project, and there's a couple of different steps involved in that. The first is that we're looking at software that's going to enable us to do that, and the second is looking at where in the process it would be appropriate for IANA to sign the zone. And so we're working with the root server community on that. We're working with the DNS ops community, and everybody's sort of trying to figure out what would be the most effective way to do that.
What software are you evaluating? Are you evaluating name servers or key signing kit? What?
There's a couple of things that right now IANA does not in fact produce the root zone. We don't publish it. VeriSign does. So the software that we're looking at would allow us to publish a root zone and at the same time or as a separate step sign it. And so it's really a registry software type of implementation. Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barbara, and all the other people who have presented during this past session, and also the audience for the thought-provoking questions. Before we go for lunch, we'll have a couple of comments from Adiel. Then we shall be able to proceed.
Actually, they are not comment, but announcement. The lunch will be at the first floor, so you have to go up one level so you can find the restaurant. You need a coupon. If you don't have the coupon yet, you can check at the registration, or there will be somewhere around to give you the coupon. Last announcement, which is a good one. We are late, but this evening is an announcement about the social event this evening. There will be a bus picking up everybody. So we meet at the lobby around 6:45. The bus will be here at 7, so if everybody can meet at the lobby at around 6:45 to go to the social event, and it's planned to happen at Carnival. So if by any chance you miss the bus, you can take a taxi to go there. We are a bit late, so we have right 1 hour and a half for the lunch instead of 2 hours. I think it will be enough, and we will come back here at 2:30, right? Thank you.